Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show today is a post-dated interview, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, Unstoppable Tracy Schmidt will be telling us a little bit about her work with the Disabilities Channel. So, can you tell me a little bit about it?
I've actually been doing it for 4 years. Oh. But they have, the Disability Channel started out when in my lifespan on Roku. And Roku is a streaming platform, kind of like Apple TV. In the States and around the world, Roku is even bigger. But here in Canada, we tend to be a bit more popular with Apple. But anybody can get Roku as a free streamer, and anyone can watch TDC, the Disability Channel, TDC, on Roku. And you can watch the stream lives on their website, the Disability Channel. But what's exciting and more recent in the past year, past 12 months or so, is that cable TV, your TV, in Halton region, which is like Burlington, Oakville, Hamilton, Milton, all those towns just a little bit west of Toronto, their cable TV for your TV, Cogeco, has picked up the show, the Today Show. So, and so that's what I'm a host of.
So, recently you had on this this guest. I mean, I understand you wanted someone good, but you couldn't get him, so you ended up with this guy. Tell me a little about him.
Actually, the reverse is true. I had somebody so-so, and then I found out the availability of this extraordinary soul who is super insightful, unbelievably connected, and a real mover and shaker and advocate in Canada, in his hometown, but also extraordinarily international, even as far-reaching as making a difference in Sweden. And what I love about that is I consider Sweden a real ahead of the times of all the countries out there that I've also interacted with, and as an athlete interacted internationally a lot. So I see what they say and then what they do. And as an athlete, I get to see the reality of what they do. And so this mover and shaker happens to be Cam Wells, extraordinary superstar. And I invited you on the show because I'm really over the moon about your recent nomination into the Canada Hall of Fame. And that includes the likes of like Wayne Gretzky and Brian Mulroney, you know, massive countrywide difference makers, kind of known as the guru Canadians around the world that are difference makers. And Cam, you are nominated for this year.
Took a lot of bribes, I assure you. But seriously, though, you had a hand in making that possible, and I wanted to let you know, and everyone out there who's played a role in that, just how much it's appreciated and much it means to me to know that my work is actually reaching lives. I wanted to take a minute to say thanks there.
Wow. Well, and thank you for reaching those lives. I mean, you and I, before the show, we were talking about, you know, a rare ailment that somebody has, and there's only one or two in all of Canada, and you're making those connections and raising awareness about that, and so many pieces of the puzzle. You know, we often skip the background of places. And so, you know, how do you communicate or get out to the media, which is where people learn and make opinions, right? And then when we think of media locations, how many of them are inaccessible? And you're the guru that created an accessibility audit guide for radio stations. So if we could have more accessible radio stations, we can have a bigger voice. Our small voice turns into an everyday voice.
It's like I was saying on your show, we should just include accessibility as part of an ongoing plan. I mean, if you can create something, create it accessible. It's always easier to take it from the get-go, I think, than to go back and reinvent the wheel.
Yes. And you have pregnant folks, and you have people with broken legs, and you have people that have just, you know, some people who just ran a marathon, so on the high performance end of physically able, but I tell you, after they ran that marathon, the last thing they want to do with all their aches and pains and muscles is climb two flights of stairs, right? So everybody's got a time and a rhythm in their life. Plus, you know, neat things like we're people over 90 have multiplied by 3 in recent years. And so more and more people are living longer and actively, but we know 55 and older, 55% of them have some kind of mobility impairment, or 65 and older, 65% of them have some kind of mobility impairment. So if everybody's older now and the majority of the population, it just makes sense that the majority of the population using your facility and your services, no matter what your world is, let's tailor it.
That's the thing, though. You might find that there are a lot of myths out there concerning what a person can do. It's funny you mention about marathon runners. About a year ago, I interviewed someone who actually ran one while on dialysis, which speaks to the achievements and the capabilities of a person. Do you find that the strength of people, this ability to rise up to your goals, plays a role in the fact that people are living longer and potentially healthier lives?
I sure do. I was just listening to a podcast from construction. I'm very interested in the construction world and making an impact there. So that, as you say, build from the get-go. Don't build for accessibility, build from the get-go. And he was saying that his 25-year-old daughter spends most of her time in a room. And then here you're talking about someone on dialysis running a marathon, and myself missing my arms, missing my legs. And I was in a World Cup regatta with 27 able-bodied men, and no one else was missing any parts of their bodies. They might have had invisible disabilities, but nobody had a visible disability. And so I'm somebody that doesn't want a flight of stairs, but yet I'm a World Cup sailor, amongst 30 in the world, male, female, with a disability, without a disability, black, white, lesbian, bi, gay, trans, queer, young, old, doesn't matter, right? One of 30. And so it's interesting what you say is it's more about the interest to get up and go and live than that man's perfectly able-bodied, well-fit, well-fed, 25-year-old gorgeous daughter who's hanging out in her room.
So, how do you suppose we as a society get around these initial preconceptions, this first glance that says, oh, you wouldn't be able to do this?
I think it's exposure. I think of, you know, some friends that live way up north in a really small town. And they are extraordinary friends. They mean a lot to me, but they shocked me when they talked about how there was at first this discomfort and disappointment that their neighbors moving in were this gay couple. And they're like, we just, you know, we spend a lot of time having a barbecue or a beer with our neighbors, and now this gay couple's moved in. And for some reason, they thought that that was going to end. And with time, obviously, they learned really quickly that their neighbors drank or didn't drink as much beer or less beer as the next guy, and that it had zero relevance what their sexual preference was. They were friendly neighbors or they're not friendly neighbors, and it was just being exposure. And I think that that's true with myself as a four-way amputee. You know, being in the 70s, nobody went to school with a disability. We were all segregated. And because I was lucky enough to, I think my immediate world had a different level of, well, of course you can do it. And it wasn't years later now that everybody's like, oh, unstoppable Tracy, no hands, no legs, climb the Himalayas. And my friends from high school are like, you know what? I completely forgot that you were missing your legs. Like, it wasn't on their radar. And they felt like, they said, I feel like such a doorknob. How could I miss that? But that was the biggest compliment ever, that they forgot that I had a disability. And so how do we rectify that? I think we make inroads and we get out there. And just like the small town having neighbors who are different than everybody else in that small town, different skin color, different gender preference, different level of visible ability, it changes people's minds by getting out there.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Kaylin Elliott will be telling us a little bit about CCRW. So, can you tell me a little bit about your work with CCRW?
Sure. So I'm Kaylin Elliott. I'm the national manager for CCRW's Youth for Future program. And what we do is we work with, on one hand, we work with job seekers with disabilities who are looking for a rewarding work experiences or to enter the labor market, perhaps after acquiring a disability or having taken some time off. And we work with employers to assist them in hiring inclusively, or if they have any challenges in hiring inclusively, we work with employers as well. And we do a lot of advocacy work from the community level up to government and policy as well. So we have a multifactored approach to our work.
So in terms of the barriers that might be facing someone trying to get back into the workforce, what are some of the common issues they might encounter?
So, would you like me to focus on youth or more in general?
If the youth perspective works best for you, then please go from there.
Okay. So, from the perspective of youth programming, many of the youth have been born with their disabilities, but many have also acquired their disability later on into their young lives. And so for individuals who have acquired a disability later on, the challenges can be considerable. As you can imagine, when you're younger and you're still learning about who you are and what you're looking for, and work is still something that you're trying to figure out. I mean, I think you're always trying to figure it out, right? And you also are learning your accommodations, what accessibility requirements that you might have, what accommodations work for you, and how those accommodations needs might change or shift depending on the type of environment that you might be working in or living in or studying in or what have you. So it's definitely multi-layered, and the more of a supportive system that you can have around you, that an individual can have around them, from friends and family to community organizations who are geared and set up to support the individual, as well as employers and institutions to support education who are set up to best accommodate. That's the best way forward, I think.
So, in terms of job accommodations, do you find there are any myths surrounding them?
Sure. So I think there are a lot of myths around accommodations around cost and complexity. Not every accommodation is going to be extraordinarily costly, and it's not always complicated to implement these accommodations. And in fact, I believe that most employers and most folks in general, don't realize that a lot of things that we've become very used to these days actually started out as accessibility options, such as push button doors or and the like. These were initially accessibility functions, and now we just we sort of incorporate them into our daily lives. So really coming from the place of allowing everyone access to opportunity, whether it's to be able to go to a movie theater or to be able to enter the room itself to attend an interview. So the doorways are wide enough. I think that coming from the perspective of this is inclusion rather than an accommodation that's thought of after the fact, I think that's really the piece that moving forward we should really focus on.
So how do you go about reaching out to the youth disability population to let them know that you're there and able to support them?
So we do our very best to be as present as possible on social media. We know that that pretty much everyone is on their phones or is on a device of some kind. Although we do understand that not everyone has regular access to internet. So we do what we can to spread the word via social media and our websites, as well as our paper flyers to our community partners. We do get some youth coming from word of mouth. Word of mouth is a very powerful way of spreading the word. So all of our documents and information is accessible and available in different formats. We're currently, I believe, revamping our website, so all of that information will be very soon available online as well.
So in your time with CCRW, is there any success moment you've experienced that stands out for you?
Oh, there are so many, and I'm biased because I run the youth program. But we hear stories all the time about folks who are looking for work, and they either know what accommodations they require or they may not, and they work hard, and the employers work hard with us, and then they end up having a really rewarding employment opportunity come from that, and then they don't necessarily need a program like this anymore. So I can think of one story, and this one story does represent many of the youth that come to the project. Although I will say that youth come to the Youth the Future program from many different backgrounds and demographics and walks of life. But I do know I remember. This one individual was had been out of school, so this person had graduated high school and couldn't find work on their own. And I believe that they tried other programming, or if things just weren't working, and they were just sitting at home and they weren't working, and their parents were worried about them. And then they joined the program, and they worked really hard. At the Youth the Future program, we start from scratch. You know, we spend 8 weeks with each of the youth in a group setting, as well as one-on-one. So there's a lot of social interaction, as well as that one-on-one individualized coaching and support. And they end up getting a job in a field that they really enjoyed. They ended up working with cars, and they kept that job, and they still have that job, and they're out of the house, and they're happy, and their parents are happy, and they're earning money. It's their own money, and it's amazing steps towards independence. And they did it on their own. That I think that's the most important part, and the thing that we celebrate not only at the Future Program at CCRW, but across the organization, is that you know, we work in partnership with the job seekers and the employers, but nothing is handed out. And so when the employers extend the job offer following an interview, that's a real legitimate job offer, and they're hiring the job seeker onto their own payroll, and we can offer support, and the amount of support that might be needed might be accepted. They may not need any support, and then they move forward together. So it's definitely very inspiring, and we know that that the more that that employers hire inclusively, we know that this brings exponentially increased opportunities for innovation, which is what we need even more now these days. And so the stories just they really write themselves. It's very inspiring work.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee at the University of Windsor is dedicated to creating a community that is well-informed of sexual violence and well-being. Through campaigns and workshops, we offer resources, tools, and education to victims and witnesses of sexual violence and are committed to creating a safe and supportive space within the UWindsor community. Connect with the Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee online to access our podcast, partake in activities, and learn more about self-care and wellness. Find us on Instagram at WeCare@UW or on Facebook at FlipTheScriptUWindsor to learn more about our campaigns.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Unstoppable Tracy Schmidt told us a little bit about the Disability Channel, and Kaylin Elliott shared her experience of CCRW. This segment of our show, we're chatting with Marina Gardner from Achieve Tahoe. So, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with Achieve Tahoe?
Sure. All the way from the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. I started with Achieve Tahoe back in probably 2000 as a participant. I have a spinal cord injury, so I'm a mono skier, and I grew up in Tahoe, and I had skied all my life, and then I had a spinal cord injury, and I got back into skiing with Achieve Tahoe. They taught me how to ski in a mono ski over, like, probably 4 or 5 years. I was in college at the time, so I could only ski during breaks, and then I got involved with Achieve Tahoe about 10 years ago when I started as a front desk staff person, taking reservations and helping people get signed up for lessons. I've been here now for 10 years, and I just recently got promoted to guest services director.
In terms of your injury, how did the skiing provided by Achieve Tahoe help you in your recovery?
For me, a big part of it was, like I said, I grew up skiing. I grew up in the mountains, and skiing was a big part of our social lives. It's something that my whole family did. It's something all of my friends did. And so for those couple of years right after my injury, before I had been able to go skiing, I felt very left out of the social environment of living in the mountains. And coming to Achieve Tahoe and relearning how to ski allowed me to access that again. For me, initially, it was just about being able to get out there and do things with my friends and family again. But once I got doing it, and in the long term, it also became about the act of skiing itself. It's really freeing. You get to go fast. You're in control of yourself and the equipment. It's nice to get out of the wheelchair and go do something that everybody else is also able to do.
So, as one who's experienced both types of skiing, do you find there's the same sensation or thrill that comes from being in a mono ski as would the able-bodied equivalent?
You know, that's an interesting question, because as a young person and a teenager, I wasn't a passionate skier. I skied because it's what my family did and what everybody around us did, and my parents wanted me to know how to ski. So I enjoyed it, but I didn't have the same passion for it that I do as an adult and as a mono skier. So I would say that for me, mono skiing is maybe even more of a thrill and more exciting and more engaging than stand-up skiing was.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with the concept of a mono ski, can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, so it's the sit-down ski that they developed for anybody who has lower limb weakness. So anybody who doesn't have use of their legs or has weakness in their legs, but who still has a strong upper body. So good strength in your arms, some amount of core strength, and it's a seat they set up that you then attach to a single ski, which is why it's called a mono ski. So you're skiing on one ski that's attached to a seat that you're sitting in, and then in your hands you're holding outriggers, which kind of look like short forearm crutches or Canadian crutches with like short, I'd say 6-inch long skis on the end. And you're using those for balance and to help you initiate your turns.
So in your time with Achieve Tahoe, you must have seen all kinds of people with varying abilities pass through. Tell me a little bit about some of the people that make the organization worthwhile.
Well, if you're talking about, like, the participants, we serve everybody, anybody who has a cognitive, physical, or sensory or disability. So anything from autism to spinal cord injuries to cerebral palsy, people with seizures, people with blindness or hearing loss. And our only restriction that we have on whether or not we can take somebody skiing is whether they are independent of a respirator. So as long as you can breathe on your own, you can come skiing with us. You don't have to be able to move your arms or move your legs or see or hear. We can work with somebody who's got cognitive delays, who needs to learn in a different way than a typical student. So I think that what makes Achieve Tahoe amazing for me and why it's somewhere that I want to work is getting to know such a large variety of people that come from all different walks of life and who want to learn how to ski despite whatever limitations that they might have, and that really anybody who's willing can learn how to ski.
So in your time with the organization, has there been an individual success moment that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of them, but I think one of the biggest ones, and this is partly because I am working in guest services, so I am working with the participants and the participants' parents to get them scheduled for lessons, but also get them comfortable with what their experience is going to be like and encourage them to push for independence and to set them up for success. So I did have a mom who called me once and she was listing all the disabilities that her daughter had and saying, you know, my daughter needs to do sit-down skiing. I want her to do this, the sit-down skiing that's in a sled, which we don't call them sleds, but often parents who call us do. And I said, you know, does your daughter walk? And she said, yeah, she walks, but she's very complicated and she just, there's no way that she can do stand-up skiing. And I told her, I said, you know, if she walks, we're going to ask that she attempt to stand-up ski. And the mom and I had a very long back and forth, and at one point she said, you know, you're not listening to me. And so I took my time and I let her explain all of the things. And by the end of the phone call, we settled on that they would rent stand-up ski equipment, and they would come and they would attempt to stand-up ski, but that I would assign an instructor that if it didn't go well, we could switch to sit-down skiing. And she came and she got her boots on and they took her out skiing and she ended up doing, I think, 2 or 3 runs on our beginner chairlift out here. And afterwards, her mom wrote an article about her experience and about the realization that, you know, the mom had always felt that she had to advocate for her child and she had to teach people about her child's disability and how amazing it was to have an organization that was advocating for her child to be independent and to do the most she could do, rather than just saying, okay, fine, we'll put her in a sit-down ski and we'll ski her around the mountain. So I think for me, that was the sort of standout moment of that our goal of giving people as much independence as they can have, it seems to be working.
So if you could send any message to all the aspiring athletes out there who might be questioning their own capabilities, what would you tell them?
I think I would tell them that it's always worth giving it a try. There's organizations like ours across the country that are all chapters of Move United, and they're doing amazing work. And I think the hardest part is taking that first step to contact an organization and say, I want to try skiing or water skiing or hiking or mountain biking or whatever the sport is that you think that maybe you can't do, and find out how that sport might be able to be adapted and how it might be something that you can learn to do. And trusting that if the experts in that field say, yeah, let's try it, I think we can get you to be able to do that, that you should give it a try.
Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.